Figure Facts for Life.
We just want you to be healthy.
Health and happiness.
If you pay attention to what goes in your body, you'll be amazed at the results.
Fuel, nourish, and heal your body.
Eating healthy, well, that's everything.
Put the right fuel in. Take care of your engine.
Here's Roberta Gennaro.
Welcome to Figure Facts for Life. I'm your host, Roberta Gennaro. I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist with over 30 years clinical nutrition experience. I want to thank you for joining me today. I have a Dr. Jessica Dunn on the line. You know, I just wanted to bring her on to talk about juvenile diabetes because this month is Juvenile Diabetes Awareness Month. And I think a lot of people are just not really aware of how prevalent it is and some of the latest research that's being done to hopefully prevent type 1 diabetes in children. So with that, I want to say hello, Jessica.
Hi, how are you, Roberta?
I'm good.
Thanks
how
for having
are you?
Me. I'm doing well. Thank you.
So you're the Senior Director for Research at the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
And actually, a few years ago, we decided to shorten our name just to the acronym, so just to JDRF.
Oh.
And a lot of it happens to do with the fact that actually over 60% of people who are diagnosed with type 1 diabetes are adults. And so we wanted to really represent all of the type 1 community. And as, you know, kids who get diagnosed grow up, they become adults too. So actually the vast majority of people living with type 1 diabetes are adults. So, you know,
wow.
we sort of shortened our name to account for that fact, just to the acronym. So if you think of like the YMCA or something similar, we're
okay.
just known by our acronym now.
I yeah. see. So, one of the things that you're doing with them is you're leading their prevention program, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And can you tell us a little bit about what that means and what type of research you support?
Sure, thanks. So we at JDRF really are focused on researching the entire lifestyle of type 1 diabetes from its earliest origins to the complications that often arise from having type 1 diabetes for decades. And so within the prevention program, we are really interested in preventing type 1 diabetes. So we look at all sorts of different facets of how and why type 1 diabetes develops and ways to screen for type 1 and ways to better diagnose type 1 diabetes and ultimately better ways to prevent type 1 diabetes. So we have a number of programs ongoing within the prevention portfolio. And we often get asked, before I get into what we're doing, we often get asked or by people in the community, you know, why should I care about prevention? And I think there's a number of reasons why people should really focus on prevention of disease. I think, you know, first and foremost, from a biological perspective, it's probably easier to prevent diseases than to cure diseases. But that doesn't mean that we're not actively trying to figure out how to cure type 1 diabetes as well. We actually think that a lot of what we're understanding about how and why disease develops will ultimately lead us to a cure for type 1 diabetes. So as we're learning about the progression of disease, we learn what the triggers are, and we think that will ultimately help us cure type 1 diabetes as well. And the second piece is that family members, so people who already have type 1 diabetes history in their families are 15 times more likely for their family members to have type 1 diabetes. So it's really important to people living with type 1 that the future generations also, are prevented it from ever getting type 1 diabetes as well. So we have a large focus on, again, prevention for those reasons.
Right.
And then within the portfolio, we have a number of different programs as well that I'm happy to speak about, the specifics of what we're interested in.
Well, and what we can do, too, is give our listeners the information that they could reach out to the organization for more detailed information, because we have a limited time. But I mean, I'm sure you guys have a wealth of information and knowledge in this area that really can help somebody that is looking to prevent it for their family, or, you know, just really manage the type 1 diabetes. So, I mean, as a registered dietitian, you know, I've helped individuals over the years manage their diabetes, and it's really powerful what you can do through diet. But with type 1 diabetes, unlike type 2, you know, type 1, you require replacing the insulin the body is not making. And oftentimes with type 2, that may not be the case. Some type 2 diabetics end up on insulin because of mismanagement, right? So, or the pancreas just putters out. But what do you think is the most exciting thing happening in the prevention research today? Because I'm all about, gosh, if you can prevent this, you know, disease, this condition, gosh, it would be great for the people, you know, the families that have been dealing with it for decades and centuries, you know, years with their, within their families.
I think that that's all that's right. And I think that's a really difficult question to answer. You know, what is the one thing that's so exciting? I think one of the something that made a splash recently was at the ADA meeting in June in San Francisco. A company and a group called so TrialNet and the company that's backing the drug Provention, not to be confused with Prevention, announced the results of a trial looking at a drug candidate to delay type 1 diabetes onset. And so it was really exciting because for the first time we've been able to show that there's a drug that can delay the diagnosis of type 1 diabetes. And then just recently they were announced, the company, then the drug was announced that they have breakthrough designation with the FDA, which means that it's intended to apply that the drug is really, for lack of a better word, a breakthrough, or that there's really a lot of evidence suggesting that the treatment is efficacious for type 1 diabetes, and it gives them you know, priority to these drug candidates with the FDA, and opens up a lot of doors in terms of getting the therapy across the approval sort of goal line. And that's really exciting because, you know, we have long thought that preventing type 1 was feasible, but now to actually have clinical evidence showing that we can delay the diagnosis has been really exciting. You know, we talk a lot about prevention overall, and while that's our ultimate goal, I think in the short term, we also talk about delaying type 1 diabetes. So if you look in the U.S., for example, the average age of onset, depending on what database you're using, is about between 7 and 14. Okay. And so we know also that, you know, that type 1 diabetes is hard to manage over the adolescent years for all the same reasons that adolescence is hard to manage. So all the, you know, physiological changes, the brain chemistry changes, the societal pressures. And so if we can think about starting to even delay the diagnosis, you know, get kids past that hump of adolescence, we also know that the disease is much easier to manage post the adolescent period. So delaying is a really important first step, you know, on the road to prevention.
Right.
So
what are the biggest unanswered questions in your field right now? I know I've heard that some people think that, you know, the type 1 diabetes comes from maybe like a virus attacking the pancreas or something like that, or, you know, stress in the system. What are some of the biggest unanswered questions, would you say?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. I think at the end of the day, we don't really know how and why type 1 diabetes develops.
Okay.
And so as you point out, that there is evidence to suggest that there may be a viral infection that triggers either the immune system to kill off the beta cells that produce insulin, or that the virus itself is causing those beta cells to die as well. And I'm not sure the mechanism of that is entirely important to understand, but I think there really is good evidence that we in the field have put together over the past decade to show that viruses probably do play a role in leading to type 1 diabetes. Now, Along with that, there's the same company that I mentioned before, Provention, with the other drug candidate, is developing a vaccine to actually test this question. And so they hope to start in their early clinical trials, their safety trials next year. And, you know, we'll be able to really get a definitive answer for whether or not viruses are a trigger for type 1. Having said that, I think even looking at the body of evidence, that's not the entire question and it's the entire answer. And it's also not true for everyone in the, you know, who develops type 1 diabetes. Not everybody seems to have this viral trigger. So then the question is, what else is there?
Right.
And so one of the things we've been looking at, for example, is the role of the microbiome in type 1 and how that may affect development. And
that's pretty powerful. I actually did a podcast and they were, you know, there's research being done with autism and looking at the microbiome, and they saw, you know, significant improvements in children with autism when they put in, like, transplanted healthy child's microbiome, you know. So that's, I mean, I always say now that the microbiome is kind of like the other brain center of our body and
yes.
really has an impact. I want to just segue to your knowledge in the area of herbal remedies and stuff. I've worked with Gymnema sylvestri with a few of my clients, and my understanding is that with Gymnema sylvestri, you can actually get increase in beta cell production. And I'm just curious, at your level, you know, what have you seen or what are you aware of in regards to Gymnema sylvestri?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I'm actually not aware of the evidence around that specific herb. I know there's been a lot of research on other sort of natural type of supplements, looking at how, you know, they can either give the beta cells some rest, or that nature. So that's particularly very interesting too, as well. And I think, you know, if we go back to the microbiome type of thing, which is certainly a natural part of our body, there's a lot of evidence suggesting that that the microbiome does shift prior to diagnosis. And so, trying to understand what is causing those shifts and whether or not there are changes that we can make. We know that diet, for example, is a key factor in shaping our microbiome, whether
yes.
that can help change the trajectory, or
right.
whether there are, you know, things like probiotics or prebiotics that can also help shift the microbiome to sort of a healthy state that would lead to alleviation of some of the stress on the beta cell. You know, and you talked about how the microbiome is our second brain. And, you know, one of the things that we've known for a long time is that there's a huge immune component to our guts. And so really that's how we think that the microbiome is helping to shift the disease in terms of type 1 diabetes too, really its effects on the immune system. But that all remains to be unseen.
Unfolded, right? Remains to be seen, yes. And, you know, as somebody that was diagnosed celiac, you know, 29 years ago, I think 28, 29 years ago, that I had symptoms that I thought, you know, I was working with a physician at the time and I was like, check me for diabetes, because I had some of the symptoms related to mm-hmm. diabetes, you know, the dry mouth, excessive thirst, you mm-hmm. know, heavy urination and stuff. And he's like, no, you know, you're not diabetic. And so for me, it was gluten. And I know that gluten can tend to attack certain organ systems. So I'm curious about the research with that and type 1 diabetes and see, you know, where that kind of goes, because could it, our food supply and our diets are just heavy laden with gluten, especially in young children, you know, their mac and cheese, their pizza, you know, all this stuff. And if they're sensitive to it. Now, I know that there's a doctor who came from Italy, Dr. Guandolini, he's out of University of Chicago. And when he first came here, he was like, where are all the celiac kids? And they started doing a screening. So screening younger could potentially catch children, you know, if that's the culprit, if that's something that maybe was causing the attack on the pancreas and then manifestation of type 1 diabetes. I mean, just kind of throwing it, just talking off the cuff, but I'm really excited about the research that you're doing and the research in this area. And I want to thank you for joining me today. This time goes so quickly, Jessica, but thanks again for being a guest on Figure Facts for Life. I'm Roberta Gennaro. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Figure Facts LLC, all one word. Have a great day and ciao, ciao for now.